What's going on? Happy Monday, July 9th. Coming off a big weekend, International Fight Week, culminating in Las Vegas, Nevada, at the T-Mobile Arena with UFC 226. And you're listening to the recap show for UFC 226, joined, as always, by P-Money on Twitter. He is Sweet Pappy Jones. Pat, what's going on, bro?
Oh, Big Jake, we are just recovered from International Fight Week. It was a superb weekend. You know, Friday we had the tough finale. Saturday had UFC 226. The International Fight Week curse was alive and well, though, with Holloway being a last-minute scratch from his title fight against Brian Ortega. That did not dampen the weekend too much, though. It was still a solid action all the way around. Can't wait to talk about it and look forward to this Boise card we got coming up this weekend.
Yes, we will be back later in the week breaking down Boise. Look for that podcast to drop maybe around Thursday. A lot of fun scraps on that one this coming Saturday on Fox Sports 1. But UFC 226, you mentioned the curse of International Fight Week. It did knock out Max Holloway. Brian Ortega refusing to take on Jeremy Stephens. I'm not 100% clear on how everything went down because there were a bunch of featherweights involved. But we do know that Max was pulled because of concussion-like symptoms, which if you watch the interview with him on UFC Tonight with Mike Bisping and Kenny Florian, Bisping actually comments during the interview, "Dude, you look like you're about to fall asleep. Are you all right?" And he did seem kind of just dazed and out of it, much more than he already seems during normal interviews. So he was pulled. I guess he got rocked in practice or something. Concussions are a very serious thing. You know, I've talked about in my own personal experience having broken over 20 bones. I've torn my ACL, done a ton of stuff. The most serious injury I've ever had by far is a concussion. So I definitely don't look at that thing like things like that lightly. But the good news is the turnaround might be quick. If it wasn't that bad of a concussion, we might be looking to have Ortega Holloway rescheduled for the near future. Maybe not, you know, in the next month, but perhaps in two or three months down the line. And that's really the reason why I didn't have an issue with Brian Ortega not accepting a fight. I think originally they were looking to throw Jeremy Stephens versus Frankie Edgar as a replacement. Frankie Edgar couldn't because of some medical procedure he had recently. So Brian Ortega was offered the Stephens fight, turned that down. At first, I was, you know, a bit on the what-the-fuck side. You know, take the fight, salvage the card. Everyone wanted to see Ortega fight on this card. But having kind of thought it through, the fact that Holloway and Ortega might be a salvageable fight for even, you know, going down later this summer or sometime in the fall, I think it made sense for Ortega to not lace it up and wait for his title shot against the champion, Max. So that was wild. We had the wildness of Daniel Cormier tripping on a speaker after the press conference. It ends, and down goes DC. Dana White standing right there looked, I mean, he had a nice tan going being in Vegas all week. He turned ghost white immediately. Everyone feared the worst. Especially, you know, just a few months now separated from Tony Ferguson tripping on a wire and that leading to all the fracas at UFC 223, where Ally Aquinta, of all people, ended up subbing in for him. So everyone was a little freaked out by that, but it didn't end up being a problem. Obviously, DC winning at the main event. I want to start with the prelims, though. What did you think about that? Early prelims, we saw Emily Whitmire defeat Jamie Moyle via unanimous decision. A little drama there. Apparently, Emily Whitmire trains at Extreme Couture, where Vinny Magulace is a coach. Vinny told Emily over and over that one of his students, Jamie Moyle, he would not be cornering. And Vinny was there for a lot of Whitmire's training and all that, knew a lot about her game plan, and then last minute is there cornering Moyle. You know, I've got a lot of friends in the business who are friends with Vinny, so I'll kind of wait to hear Vinny's side of it before I cast judgment, but that definitely sounded a little shady. Dan Hooker looking excellent, getting a first round KO over Gilbert Burns, going over to the prelims. Three unanimous decision wins for Curtis Melinder, Dracar Close, and Rafael Asunciao. Asunciao, someone we haven't really heard on the mic that much, finally getting his chance with Joe Rogan and during his post-fight speech saying, you know, what more do I need to do? I'm 11-1. I want a title shot or something better than, you know, fighting the number 11 guy in the division, which I definitely agree with. I don't know if I would put Asunciao up with the Garbrandts and the Dillashaws of the division, but at the same time, he is the rightful number three and should be taking on, you know, top five talent in that division at bantamweight at least. In the last prelim fight, Paulo Costa versus Uriah Hall. Man, Uriah Hall, early in that fight in the first and second round, was devastating Costa with that jab, hit Costa dead in the mouth with that jab dozens and dozens of times, but it was Costa, the younger guy, who ended up rocking Hall, putting him on roller skates, dropping him, and getting that TKO victory about halfway into round two. Pat, what did you make of these UFC 226 prelims?
Oh, man, the prelims started things off very nicely for UFC 226. As you mentioned, a little bit of drama with the Whitmire-Moyle fight. I had read an article with Vinny Magalhães saying that he had told one of Emily Whitmire's managers or something to that effect that he would, in fact, be in Jamie Moyle's corner, and that apparently the manager that Vinny had talked to never relayed that information to Emily. So it's basically on Emily's camp for the lack of communication is what Vinny was saying. Some people would say it's on Vinny for not telling that to Emily Whitmire directly. As you know, that's kind of the decent human thing to do, you know, just person to person. But in the same interview, Vinny had also stated that he said, you know, I barely know who Emily is. Like, we don't train together. Like, we both train at Extreme Couture, but we don't really train together was kind of his thing. Like, kind of making it like, oh, yeah, there's really no close relationship there, blah, blah, blah. Jamie's a purple belt under me, you know. Well, you know, just effective communication, people. It's definitely important. Great scrap, though. Good for Emily getting her first UFC victory. Dan Hooker remaining hot, getting the stoppage over Gilbert Burns. Great strikes there to finish it out. And even though on the Fox Sports 1 portion, we had the Alessio Di Chirico, Alex Caceres, and we got switched over there to the Tough 27 finale. All went to decisions. Melinder, Close, Asunciao. All fun fights, though. Melinder versus Griffin was a back-and-forth affair. Great scrap there, as was Close versus Venata. Both guys, man, that fight, they were just throwing everything at each other. Close, very strong decision there. Asunciao, same with him. Great performance against a super tough bantamweight prospect in Font. Dropped him. Use the hands, use the grappling. Really a well-rounded performance there. And Paulo Costa versus Uriah Hall. Jake, as you mentioned, Hall making a lot of good work with that jab early. Had a bit of a reach advantage with that jab. But, man, Costa, with that power, he was putting in some good shots to the body. A lot of good body work, body kicks, punches to the body. It was very unfortunate there were at least one blow that strayed low. Another that was very debatable that Paulo Costa hit Uriah Hall with. Uriah did get ample time to recover from each one. Certainly wasn't rushed back into it. Paulo Costa and that power just being too much. Getting the TKO in the second round, just brutal, super heavy body shots, heavy shots to the head. He was just banging him up with everything. A great stoppage from Costa. I know he's really not passing the eye test that a lot of people are putting out there, but I mean, hey, until he pops on, he's a huge middleweight. But standing next to Uriah Hall, I was like, okay, this isn't a huge size discrepancy like standing next to, say, Johnny Hendricks. As I was looking at him, I said, okay, you know, maybe there's a chance. Maybe there's a chance it's natural. I don't know. Until the magma's in the sauce, we can't really go around saying anything other than impressive performance from Paulo.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to kind of take a stance either way on Paulo Costa, someone accusing him of taking steroids. I mean, we do right now in the UFC have pretty strict standards. USADA isn't getting beat by many people. They test a lot. They test randomly. But at the same time, like you said, the eye test, just looking at Paulo, it would be silly to argue that he's not on some sort of performance enhancer. So I'm kind of going the same road as you are with him until he does get caught, which seems like it should be any time now, you know, not to say he seems like he would be a cheater, but like you said, just going by the eye test, that man is doing more than just working out his glamour muscles. But Costa still undefeated now. I think this brings his record up to 12-0. It was a little contentious before the fight, but he was very classy on social media afterwards. Gets a performance of the night bonus, and the man's a straight dime. So things going well for the Brazilian Paulo Costa. Moving up to the main card. And the main card especially had a lot of results. I just was not expecting. You and I both agreed that Gokhan Saki would be the more technical fighter and probably win the fight. But Khalil Roundtree Jr. Making us both put our what is the saying? Eating our hats. We were eating our hats after this one, not just winning, but getting a TKO finish 96 seconds into the first round. Looking very good there. Tony Pettis beating Michael Chiesa via armbar in the second round. Didn't expect a sub going either way here, but Pettis looking like the Pettis of old. I'm glad I went with my gut here. You know, I was thinking it's normally the younger guy with the positive trajectory that beats not necessarily an old Pettis, but a Pettis who in the last few years had been struggling mightily to stay in the win column. Pettis at a lightweight looking like I said, the Anthony Pettis of old, beating a Michael Chiesa, who I guess is going to be moving up to welterweight after this fight, after missing weight at 157.5. Pettis looking dynamite. And then another fight that went the way a lot of people didn't expect. A lot of folks thought that similarly to the Gokhan Saki Khalil Roundtree fight, Paul Felder with, you know, more experience, with a lot more technical striking game, would likely win the fight. But it was Mike Perry who actually used his size and, you know, maybe this move over to Jackson's was the right thing for him, because he definitely looked improved since his few losses he took there going into this fight. But Mike Perry, I think, getting the deserved decision win, winning the split decision 29-28, 28-29, 29-28. I had Perry winning two of those rounds. Interesting wins by Roundtree, Pettis, and Perry, all guys who kind of had a lot of people doubting their chances to get victory, but all of them coming out in the win column. What did you make of these fights, Pat?
Well, definitely a big upset as far as Roundtree over Saki. Saki, of course, we talked and everybody did about his K-1 credentials leading up to that fight. Maybe he took Roundtree too lightly, but yeah, he got lit up early. Big TKO for Roundtree. Some great momentum for him at the light heavyweight division. Pettis versus Chiesa, you know, I was really back and forth on this one in my head. I said, these guys both kind of look to be each other's kryptonite. Chiesa struggling with the lankier strikers. Pettis actually having some trouble with some of the more wrestling or grappling-based fighters as of late, although he has had spectacular grappling success in the past, and as has always been a very good grappler. He had been going through it as of late. I had sided with Chiesa in this one, but Anthony Pettis came through, got a fantastic decision, softened Chiesa up with the strikes, ended up getting that submission on the ground. Textbook Pettis performance. It was good to see him do his thing, get back to form there. And, yeah, Mike Perry coming in, getting the what I would deem as an upset victory over Paul Felder. I mean, I knew that Perry had a good chance. Felder moving up 15 pounds from 155 to 170, fighting a guy who was similarly ranked as him. Even though Felder was a little bit taller, as I was watching this fight, I realized where I'd made the miscalculation. And, you know, I said there is, or at least there can be, a difference between guys moving up a weight class just by virtue of them not cutting and guys who are actively cutting down to get to that weight class. Like, you're probably, if you're the guy who's actively cutting down, you're probably still going to be bigger. And I feel that that was the case with Mike Perry. I mean, again, Paul Felder a little bit taller, but you could just see as far as the stoutness, Mike Perry, just a very stoutly built welterweight. Paul Felder, I said, yeah, I could see him. And of course, this being short notice as well, you know, Paul Felder didn't have time to really hit the weights and strength training or anything like that. Again, he was basically just a lightweight that didn't cut weight. It's not like he was a lightweight that put in a bunch of strength and conditioning to, you know, build the added muscle or et cetera, et cetera. It wasn't one of those things. So, you know, Felder still did well considering, but the platinum Mike Perry got it done in good fashion. Definitely seemed to be picking up some tools already from the tutelage under Jackson Winklejohn. Solid performance there. I mean, it was action from the very beginning. These guys were both busted up the first 30 seconds in the first round. So definitely solid action. Very fun.
And, you know, Mike Chiesa missing weight brings up another thing which we might dedicate a whole episode to in the future. Who knows? But as far as the weight classes in the UFC, the potential future redistribution of weight classes, you know, there's been a lot of talk, especially recently, about the need for 165 because there's so much talent that seems to be between 155 and 170, and they don't necessarily fit into either mold. Look at guys like Chiesa, guys like Kevin Lee, even guys like Paul Felder, perhaps, where they would fit in with a future reshuffling. That would be very interesting. But moving on, the co-main event, and pardon me in advance if I do sound a little bit wheezy. The pollen is in the air, and I'm starting to hear it in my own voice myself, so apologies for that, but we move forward, onward. The co-main event, Francis Ngannou versus Derek Lewis. You know, a fighter's performance isn't necessarily always dictated by their skill and ability. A lot of it comes down to the mental game and the mentality. And a lot of times you just see two guys, normally when you see it, it's only one fighter having an off night. You rarely see both fighters in a fight have an off night, but it happens. You know, it happens greater to certain guys. You know, you think a guy like a BJ Penn or a Donald Cerrone who really would stray wildly from fight to fight. You know, a fighter's mentality has a lot to do with it. And just for some reason or another, both Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou had off nights. They just weren't really going for anything. Herb Dean, even at one point, had to chide both of them for not being aggressive at all. Derek Lewis ends up getting the unanimous decision. But I think one round, Francis Ngannou maybe threw three punches. I mean, these guys were just kind of standing there, looking at each other, not doing much. I don't know if I'd necessarily go as far as to say it was the worst heavyweight fight of all time. We've seen some stinkers. Nikita Krylov versus Soa Pelele comes to mind. There have been some historically bad ones before that. I remember a Ben Rothwell fight, I think, in Denver that was quite terrible, a mile up. So, it was a bad fight. Derek Lewis, another underdog, gets the win over Francis Ngannou. Dana White had comments about Francis Ngannou's ego running away from him, and that being a part of why he had fallen under some hard times recently, which I thought was pretty ironic considering maybe the biggest driver of Francis Ngannou's ego was Dana White himself saying that he hit harder than a vehicle in a car crash, and one day he was going to be a global superstar. Dana kind of pointing the finger at Francis when he was a huge part of that reason and problem. That's Dana for you, I guess. But, yeah, Derek Lewis gets the dub over Francis Ngannou. I don't really have much else to say on that one. You?
Jake, this fight was as boring as watching snails race. I mean, we have certainly seen some heavyweight snoozers over the years. Krylov versus Pelele, you mentioned. That fight was terrible, but at least that fight ended in a finish eventually. This one went the full 15, and it was pretty boring. This was like the heavyweight version of Rashad Evans versus Little Nog. It was just patty cake in. A bunch of guys just kind of extending their hands out, trying to find the distance on the other guy. And I had heard someone, I want to say it was someone on the Fox Sports 1 analyst desk, that had postulated, you know, these guys both have the reputation of being big, scary, heavyweight, one-punch knockout hitter. They're both used to being that guy when they go into this match. This was a particular match. Of course, everybody at heavyweight's scary. Everybody at heavyweight can knock you out at one punch. You know, any punch with the small gloves, et cetera, et cetera. But still, there's still, of course, anyone can get knocked out with any punch in any weight class. But there are still different levels and different levels of scariness, you know, and people who are regarded, you know, there's volume strikers, there's one-punch hitters. And, yeah, Derek Lewis, Francis Ngannou, definitely regarded as some of the biggest and scariest. And it was really one of the first times, even though, you know, they've both taken on some of the biggest and scariest guys at heavyweight. As far as just reputation, these were the two guys, they basically had the same reputation as one another. It was almost like fighting a mirror image of themselves, I dare say. Led to basically a stalemate of a fight. Derek Lewis, I think, was just a little less scared to engage in this one, a little less hesitant, and just did enough out there to realize, look, nothing is really happening in this fight. If I just put a couple strikes out there, you know, I'll probably take it. And that's exactly what happened. Your boy did call for Derek Lewis to win this one. Didn't really go anything how I envisioned it or would have liked it to, but, you know, when those big underdogs cash, you know, you'll take it however you can get it. But, yeah, absolutely one of the more boring heavyweight fights I've ever seen.
Yeah, I put a couple of units of sports entertainment on Derek Lewis as well. Got a decent return on it, as boring as the fight was. And then we go to the main event. Daniel Cormier versus Stipe Miocic, and Daniel actually called his shot. I'm not going to play the clip in fear of being struck off of YouTube, but on a interview with, I think, the UFC Tonight crew just a couple days before the fight, he talked about how he had been punching a lot harder, and B, talked a lot about how he thought he exiting the clinch Stipe's hands would be a little low, and he would have a chance to catch him then, and he did exactly that. They were tied up in the clinch, and as they disengaged, Stipe's hands were just a little bit too low. Daniel rocks him with a right hook, drops him, and follows up and becomes your fifth multi-division champion 4 minutes and 33 seconds into the first round by KO. DC, now a champ, and currently holds both belts at 205 and 265. Obviously I've mentioned on this show before how Cormier is my favorite fighter, so personally I was geeking out and marking out very, very hard. But historically, I mean, this is a big win for DC, dethroning the first man to ever defend the heavyweight title three times in Stipe, who I'm sure will be back, and I do believe is probably the best heavyweight in the division, not named Daniel Cormier right now. But Cormier put a stamp on it, I don't want to talk about his future yet, because it was just as noteworthy what happened after the fight. But for the fight itself, what did you make of Cormier defeating Stipe Miocic, becoming the champ at 205 and 265?
Well, Jake, this was a very tough one for me to predict. Definitely saw this one going either way. Daniel Cormier really solidified his legacy as one of the pound-for-pound greatest that mixed martial arts has ever seen, just as far as... And in the pound-for-pound talks, a lot of people quantify it in different ways. For me, this is an example where Daniel Cormier, undefeated at heavyweight, never lost a fight there, became the UFC heavyweight champion. At light heavyweight, beat literally everybody except for John Jones, and John Jones literally pissed hot immediately after both of their fights. Not like a couple years later, John Jones tested hot, which cast doubt on his legacy, but literally, like, after every single fight he had with Daniel Cormier, he tested hot for performance enhancing drugs in competition. Definitely throws a lot of that out the window as far as I'm concerned. As far as effect on the legacy, pardon me, Daniel Cormier, I dare say, has the most thorough pound-for-pound resume of anybody in MMA history. He's also beaten Anderson Silva. He's also beaten Dan Henderson, who they themselves have quite an argument on the pound-for-pound list. Daniel Cormier, man, I kind of took umbrage. I didn't like how he was up there kind of bragging how he was talking about he was knocking out all of his training partners. I did think that was uncharacteristically classless from Daniel Cormier. I didn't really appreciate that. Don't go out there bragging about how you're knocking out your training partners. That's not really cool, first of all. It's great that you're, beasting in the gym. I think it's pretty cool. And, I mean, me personally, I don't. I'm like, it's great you're killing it in training and that it's transferring over to the gym. But, man, good luck getting training partners to sign up for you in the future. I mean, that's neither here nor there. But just as far as his pound-for-pound status, I think he is at the very top of the list right now. And as it sits, has to be considered the absolute GOAT in MMA. It was a fantastic performance for him. And the way he's done it at heavyweight as well, I think really solidifies his pound-for-pound status, because pretty much everybody he's beat has been significantly larger than him, 6'4", 6'5". He's beaten dudes that are gigantic. From cleaning out the light heavyweight division to the heavyweight division, it was, fantastic. Fantastic performance from Cormier, one of the seemingly good dudes in MMA, gets the victory, and a sweet coming full circle story, especially getting to win the heavyweight belt. in the same building that he was knocked out in to lose the light heavyweight championship just a year prior.
Yeah, it was a great night. We found out DC doesn't just stand for Daniel Cormier. It also stands for double champ. And we will be back later on this week to talk about that Brock Lesnar confrontation in the ring, what it means. Cormier said he might defend the belt at 205 again before fighting Brock. It's still unclear exactly how long Brock needs to be in USADA testing before he'll be eligible to fight. Will a fight against John Jones be in the cards? After that, we have a lot to sort of get through and look at. So we will be back later this week, talk a little bit about that. Of course, later in the week, like I said, to preview UFC Boise. But I think that does it for today. Pat, anything before we send it off?
Jake, nothing but appreciation for everyone tuning in. Always a pleasure. We love doing it for the people. Jake, always good catching up, breaking down them fights with you, brother.
Always a pleasure. The pleasure's mine, buddy. Tune in, obviously, on Twitter, the MMA Podcast Suite, Pappy Jones. Listen to us on YouTube, SoundCloud, iTunes. You can find all the links on the Twitter. And like Pat said, we appreciate the shit out you, and we will catch you another time down the road. Until then, we gone.